Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Alternative Vegan Podcast. Today, I'm going to be going over something that I should have gone through before, but I can't remember because it's been such a long time since I started this thing. It's the concept of dal and how the Indians tend to eat it. I cannot speak for everybody, obviously. India is a vast country. There are multiple regions. There are multiple cuisines. There's multiple ways of doing things. And even in the south and the north, there's going to be various opinions on how you do things, much less in, you know, city to city, household to household. Let's be perfectly honest, things are done differently. There's going to be a few overarching themes going on, let's say, but by and large, dal is one of those things that's so ubiquitous and so commonly eaten across the Indian diaspora. I'm talking in India itself, across the, you know, South Pacific, in the islands, in the United States, in Canada, pretty much anywhere where Indians end up, they're gonna want to have dal of some kind in some way, shape, or form, and they're gonna make it in some way, shape, or form with what they have available. And that's why I can't speak for everyone, obviously, nor can I speak for every dal recipe. However, I can give you some very broad generalizations from which you can start your explorations if you haven't already, or maybe expand your horizons if you have. The main differences between North and South Indian dal is that in the South, we tend to have dal being a lot more liquidy, doesn't have quite as much fat, and the spices are usually whole spices that we use in there, with the exception of turmeric. In the north, they tend to have dal more like a stew. It tends to be a lot thicker. There tends to be more fat. There tends to be more ground spices, so you won't just stop with the whole spices that you use for, the tarka, as it's called, where it's just oil and spices. You'll also have some like garam masala or some other, you know, ground spices to enhance the flavor of it. I don't really want to get into the, you know, nitty gritty of, you know, those specific differences, but I just want to give you a general overview. So sort of, I guess the main difference stems from the fact that in the north, they do eat a lot more bread than we do in the south. So you kind of want something a little, you know, thicker so that you can pick it up with the bread. Whereas in the south, we tend to eat a lot more rice. So you kind of want to mix up the rice with the dal and, you know, that becomes a thing that you pick up and eat. Which also goes into the differences in the rice that we eat in the north and the south. In the north, they tend to prefer very long grain, very fluffy, very separate rice. In the south, I don't know if it's traditional or if it's just, you know, what I've seen in the homes that I've visited, but they do like long grain rice, but the shorter grained rices are more conducive to eating dal, you know, South Indian style, where it's a little more watery, and the rice doesn't tend to get cooked as fluffy and separate as the North Indian rice. It actually tends to be a lot more mushy and like sticky than you would have in the north. On top of which, regardless of what age you are, you tend to sort of mash the rice down while you're mixing it with your dal so that the whole thing becomes like this creamy, you know, squishy consistency. I'm not describing it very well, but if you have ever had pongal, that dish where we, you know, or it's called khichdi in the north, the dish where you cook rice and lentils together and you fry up some spices and add that to the whole lot, you'll see a pointed difference in how we make it in the south versus how they make it in the north, because it pretty much speaks to our preferences with, you know, how we prefer to eat dal and rice. In the south, we want it to be more mushy. So if you look at my recipe for pongal in the cookbook that I wrote, it's called Ven Pongal, Vennpongal. The way I wrote it was that you're supposed to cook the rice way the hell down to mushy consistency, same as the lentils that you're using. And in the north, I found out after, you know, talking to quite a few people from the north who do like khichdi, that they tend to use basmati rice. Now, it's funny enough that the British dish khichdi is based on the North Indian version of pongal, or khichdi as they call it there. And so the ones that are derived, you know, in Great Britain, the version that they eat, which has the fish and the garam masala and all the rest of it, they tend to use long grain rice, just like they would in the north. So, like, you can sort of see those influences being carried through long after the, I don't want to call it split, but sort of the difference in opinion that the northerners and the southerners have with regards to rice. So, like, just like in the north you tend to have thicker, stewier dal than you do in the south it tends to be a lot more watery, you also tend to have a difference in the consistency of how you're going to cook the dal. In the north, dal that's been cooked down to a puree, shall we say, is considered dal that's been ruined. You'll have variations. Obviously, this is not every household, and this is not every northerner, but, like, the people whose homes I've eaten in, when they serve me dal, I can generally tell what region of the country they come from based on the consistency of the dal itself. The northerners tend to have texture to the dal, like you can still see the split peas or the whatever lentil it is that they're using. In the south, we tend to have everything, I don't want to say homogenized, that's not really fair, but it does tend to cook down way, way, way more, and nobody's going to look at you twice if the dal is completely disintegrated into the water. It basically saves you the step of having to mash it into your rice in the first place, so it's like nobody's really fussed one way or the other. And it's just, again, it's a difference of opinion. They taste different. And there are times when I crave the North Indian style, and there's times when I crave the South Indian style. It's just, it's different. It's not, one is not better, one is not worse. It's just different. To sort of explain what dal is, because I've been using the word quite a lot, and I'm not sure if everybody who's listening is really familiar with the term. Dal is pretty much the Indian word for beans. I believe it's Hindi. I could be mistaken, but you do hear the word used in the South as well, even though there are various words in the South that's used for, you know, the same dish. In Tamil Nadu, where my family is coming from, we call it parupa. In Telugu, you call it papu. You call it, like, a bunch of different words in a bunch of different states in the South. But, like, you're still going to, pretty much anybody from India will know what you mean when you ask them for dal. If you tell them that you're eating dal, or if you want to eat some dal, they'll know what you're talking about. They'll have a pretty good idea. Although they may serve you something different based on what their tendencies are, it's pretty much universally understood that you're talking about the same thing, regardless of how you prepare it. It's much like how in the United States, the word we use for the dish and for the actual product itself is beans. So if you know, say, for example, go to a barbecue and you have, you know, so-called baked beans, it's not, you know, you're using the word bean to describe both the vegetable, you know, the bean itself, and, you know, the dish, which is beans. So, like, if you have, like, red beans and rice, you're not using a different word for the bean and for the dish. It's pretty much the same thing. It's, you know, bean is pretty much the generic term for both the food and for the uncooked form, much like in most Indian languages, the word that they use for the pulse or the bean or the whatever is the same one as they use for the dish. So although there's a couple of exceptions, which, you know, for example, in the north they have a dish called rajma, where it's like a red bean type of thing. The bean is called rajma, and the dish is also called rajma, but you're not going to call that dal per se. It's a special dish, much like dal makhani. It's a Punjabi dish where they add, I think, heavy cream, if I'm not mistaken, to their green lentils that they cook down with, you know, spices and whatnot. Of course, there's chana masala. Chana is the word for chickpeas. There's a ton of different ones in the north that they have. There's a ton of different ones in the south. In the south, we have something we call sundal, where it's soaked or sprouted beans that are sautéed with, you know, whole spices and curry leaves and, you know, sometimes garlic, but usually coconut and, you know, asafoetida and mustard seed and cumin seed and curry leaves and things like that. It's a very simple dish, but it's delicious. You can use, like, boiled peanuts for it. You can use mung bean sprouts. You can use pretty much any bean sprout that you can get your hands on. And it's a pretty simple process to sprout your own beans, although pretty much every store you go to now sells the pre-sprouted beans if you're not in the mood to do it yourself. So, like, again, there are exceptions to every rule, and even though dal is pretty much the generic term for the dish and for the product itself, you know, you're going to get some variation, you're going to get some difference of opinion. So, like, reason I'm saying all this and I'm putting all these caveats and whatnot is because I know how passionate people get about it, because it is such a staple food. Everybody eats it. It's such a basic part of our diet that it's, you know, it can incite some passions. It can get people pretty flared up about it, shall we say. So the reason I'm putting all this hemming and hawing and, you know, all these caveats on it is because I don't want anyone to think that I'm trying to leave them out. I'm really not. I'm just trying to give you my experience and give you an overview of what I know, which is only a tiny sliver of what's out there. So, you know, bear with me. So dal is pretty much used to refer to any kind of split hulled bean. So, for example, mung dal is mung beans that have been split and the skin has been removed. So it's, you know, generally referred to as mung dal. You're going to have various different, you know, types of the splitting and the hulling and the rest of it. For example, masoor dal is lentils that have had the skin removed, and you have the whole one where it's just been skinned, and then you have the halved one where it's been skinned and split. I don't know the exact order of operations for how that goes about, but, you know, if you go to a typical Indian store, you'll find, it's called masoor dal, M-A-S-O-O-R, dal, and they look like little red lentils. They look exactly like red lentils because I think it's the same thing. You'll see, like, four different varieties of it. You'll have the one that's split and hulled and kind of matte in color, looks kind of dull orange. You have the one that's really, really bright, bright orange, and it looks kind of shiny, and that's only hulled, it's not split. And that one's like a special kind, and it's more expensive than the regular, you know, red lentil. And then you have the red lentil that's really bright and shiny, but it's also split. And then you have the whole red lentil that's kind of dull looking and matte finished. It's the same thing, but just buy whatever's cheaper. You know, at the end of the day, the damn thing cooks down to a yellow mass anyway, so it's not going to make a difference, you know, if you buy the fancy one or the cheap one. It really doesn't matter. Just get whatever's cheap. Same goes for thur dal. I can't remember what exactly that bean is that they use to make thur dal, but it's got a very special flavor. And that's usually the bean that they use in traditional, you know, I'm using air quotes here, traditional dal that you'll get at most restaurants in the north or in the south. They have oily thur dal, they have regular thur dal. I tend not to buy the oily one because the reason that they put the oil on there in the first place is because they wanted to preserve the dal a little bit longer and keep it from getting bugs and keeping it from going bad so that you can keep it for, like, years. But my issue is that before cooking it, you kind of have to wash off the oil because it does not taste very good. I'm the last person to be afraid of calories, but that stuff is nasty. You want to wash off that oil. So, like, to avoid going through that rigmarole, I just go and buy the regular thur dal, not the oily one, just the regular one, and I store it in airtight jars. I have a vacuum sealer, so I use those little mason jars, and I use the lid sealer, and, you know, it keeps pretty much indefinitely. I've never had a problem with sealing it in mason jars. I'm not saying you have to go out and get a vacuum sealer. I'm just saying, like, for my own paranoia, because these dals are so expensive. At my local grocery store, they average anywhere between $1.25 and $1.75 a pound. So, like, pound for pound, it's one of the most expensive things I'm buying. You know, versus my vegetables, which I usually don't spend more than 99 cents a pound on, or like my rice, which I, you know, a couple of pounds for a dollar. Pound for pound, my beans are my most expensive thing that I buy, so I really don't want them to go bad. The only thing more expensive than the beans are the nuts, you know, like cashews and pistachios and almonds and peanuts and whatnot. Like, those are atrociously expensive unless I buy them in very specific places, and they're still very expensive. So, like, again, I like to keep, you know, those vacuum seal situations going on for those things so they don't go bad. But if you're afraid of your Thordal getting bugs or going bad or whatever, and you need to store it for a very, 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 very long time, meaning more than a year or so, the oily one is an option. I just wouldn't suggest that you get it because it's disgusting. Then you have, so the Masoor dal is the red lentil, the Tur dal is the yellow one. You have Mung dal, which is the hulled and split mung beans. You have Urad dal, which I know they make in Pakistan as a dal, but I find the texture of it to be horrifically slimy. I don't much care for it that way. I prefer to use it, as we do in the South, as a spice or as the base for fritters. So what you do with urad dal when you have a large quantity of it, because sometimes you get it on sale and you're like, oh my God, it's so cheap, let me go buy a bunch of it. And then now you have like a 6-pound container of urad dal on your hands and you don't know what the hell to do with it, because you only, as a spice, you only use like a quarter teaspoon, half teaspoon or so of it at a time. And you're just like, why did I buy, you know, 6 pounds of urad dal? What's wrong with me? And even when you're making dosa, you're not, you know, it's like 4 parts rice to 1 part urad dal. You're never going to get through 6 pounds of it unless you make fritters. So what you do is that you take the urad dal and you soak it in warm water. It doesn't have to be boiling hot. Just, you know, warm water from the tap is fine. You soak it in warm water for about like an hour or so. And then you grind it in the food processor with the smallest amount of water possible so that it makes a really thick paste. And then you drop it by spoonfuls into hot fat. You want to go about like 350 to 375 degrees of like canola oil or peanut oil or corn oil or something like that. About medium high. You don't want it to be too hot, because if it gets too hot, it'll burn on the outside before getting cooked on the inside. But you drop them by teaspoonfuls into the hot oil and you fry them. They're freaking delicious. The only spices you really need for it is roughly cracked black pepper. It has to be roughly cracked. If it's too finely cracked, again, it'll burn. So like you want it very roughly cracked. Some ginger if you have it, some salt if you have it. And pretty much that's it, because this thing stands on its own. It's freaking delicious. The texture is crispy. It's crunchy. It's called medu vada. If you ever see it on an Indian restaurant menu, get it. It's very, very tasty, but it's so simple to make if you have a bunch of urad dal on hand that, you know, it's just something to do with excess urad dal. But if you're from, I believe Pakistan, they cook it, or either the Pakistanis or the Punjabis, I can't remember. One of the two of them cook urad dal as a dal. And I tried it, and I found it to be, you know, a little too slimy for my liking. So, you know, your mileage may vary. You may find somebody who makes it in such a way that you do find it enjoyable. Or maybe you like the sliminess. I don't know. This is your life. You're going to live it the way you want to. I'm just giving you my own opinion. So you have the urad dal, which is black. They're tiny, tiny little beans that are black on the outside. They're not called black beans. I think it's called black gram or something like that in English. I don't know that there's quite an English word for it. And those are hulled and also split. My sister-in-law in Virginia, she prefers to use the whole urad dal that's been hulled. And I've found myself buying that one more often, because I feel like when I make it into, you know, the medu vada, or when I use it as a spice, or when I make it for dosa or whatever else that I'm making, I find that it behaves better. It's less, I don't know, finicky than the split one. And I find that it stands up to the oil a lot longer. So like I just tend to reach for it a lot more often than I do the split one. But if I can't find the whole one, I'll just use the split one. I'm not really all that fussed. The important thing is to find it that it's been hulled, because I don't care for the flavor of that skin. It is not pleasant. I know my mother's bought the stuff before with the skin on, and that was not a pleasant time. I did not care for it. Again, your mileage may vary, you know, do what you want with your life. I'm not here to stop you. Then you have chana dal. Now you have a couple of different kinds of chana dal. You have, the dalia, which is basically chickpeas that have been hulled and split in half and then dry roasted. So they're very puffy. They're almost like popcorn. You can use it as a snack. You can use it, as a spice, you know, to add to like, you know, hot oil and mustard seeds. You can add some of that dalia, that pre-roasted chana dal, if you want. And it's not as hard as the urad dal or the regular chana dal. It's a lot easier to bite into. So like if you have older people with, you know, dental work done and they don't want to crack it on these rock hard bullets of dal that we use as spices, just go ahead and get the dalia. Spelled D A Liya. Not universally available, but if you find it, it's a delicious little product. It also tastes good by itself. Sometimes if I'm feeling lazy, I'll just use it in place of nuts because it's a lot cheaper than nuts, let's be honest. But it's got a nutty flavor, and it's you're pretty much eating beans, for gosh sakes. I mean, you know, you can't go wrong. I just toss it with some hot oil, you know, just to let the spices that I'm going to throw onto it adhere. And then I sprinkle on some ground red chilies, you know, cayenne pepper or something like that, and a bit of garlic powder and some salt and, you know, a bit of cumin powder. Toss it together and just let it cool down to room temperature, and I just eat it as a snack. It's really delicious. Dalia is like the easiest to use form because it's pre-cooked, so you can eat it straight out of the bag if you want to. So like if you're looking for a snack that you can eat that's, you know, low in fat, because it doesn't really have any added fat unless you add some yourself, high in protein and, you know, relatively healthy for you, I think the Dalia is a pretty good option. You know, try it out if you want. And the other one is just called chana dal. It's just basically split and hulled chickpeas. Now, when you go to the Indian market and you look for chana dal, you're gonna find like five different packets marked as the same thing. And the reason being that chana dal can be made from split and hulled regular chickpeas, split and hulled tiny chickpeas, or split and hulled black chickpeas, and still be called the same thing. They're all gonna end up being the same, you know, because they're processed in such a way that they're going to cook down to the same thing. It's going to end up being the same thing. But, like, depending on your personal preferences, you know, you pick whichever one you like the best. For my own preferences, I tend to get the chana dal that's a little darker in color and rounder rather than the flatter one. I find that flavor-wise, that's my favorite. But, yeah, again, your mileage may vary. Then you have kala chana, which is black chickpeas. They're a lot longer cooking than regular chickpeas. They're not going to grind down to a hummus very easily because the skin is a lot thicker and tougher than the regular chickpeas that you find. Again, this is a personal opinion. You know, I prefer the regular chickpeas if I'm going to puree it, but if I'm going to make something that I need the chickpeas to be whole in, for example, like the sundal dish I told you about, it can also be made with boiled beans. Now, if you boil, let's say, lentils or something like that, it's a very fine line between having the whole thing being mushy and being perfectly cooked or undercooked. So, like, because it's such a finicky, you know, bean to get cooked just so, I tend to avoid mushier beans like that and tend to err on the side of, like, kala chana, which is, you know, I can cook the heck out of it and it's still going to stay in pretty good shape. I can pressure cook the hell out of it and it'll still stay in pretty good shape. So, like, I tend to use that one where I want the bean to be whole. So, like, if you have bean salads or something that you're doing, the kala chana is a good option. I mean, please cook it first. It's not something that you eat raw, but, like, you know, it's a nice option to have instead of regular chickpeas or something, which you have a risk of it splitting. Regular chickpeas I tend to use when I want to puree it or when I want to make chana dal, where it doesn't matter if a few of them burst because, like, that'll just you know, make the gravy more creamy. So, like, it's not going to hurt anything. And there's like a ton of other dals that you can find at the local Indian market. I can probably guarantee you that if there's anybody who's wandering the same aisle with you, who looks Indian, and you turn to them and you point at a weird dal of some kind that you don't know what to do with, and you point at it and you say, "What is that? How do you cook it?" Chances are they're going to have opinions. They're gonna have a lot of opinions, and they're gonna tell you about these opinions quite proudly, because it's, like I said, dal is such a staple food that we all have our way of doing it, and we're all very proud of the way we do it. So it's like, we'll tell you at length about, you know, "Oh, here's my favorite dal, that's what this is, you may not like it very much, you will like it very much, you know, here's the spices that I use." There's even some people who swear by certain brands of spice mixes that they sell at the Indian store specifically for different kinds of dal. Like, this is how big a deal dal is. So now that I've rambled on at you this long about what dal is, why don't we talk about how to cook it and how to keep it. So, simplest dish is what's called tarka dal. in the north, and you know, it's just pretty much called dal in the south. It's just depends on how thick you want to make it, you know, whatever. But the simplest one is the dal tarka, where it's you cook the beans of your choice, and it can be any bean that you want. You don't have to buy the fancy dal from the Indian store. You can even use a can of, like, black beans or kidney beans or pinto beans or whatever you get at the grocery store. Like, this is, like, a very simple, you know, takes 5 seconds dish. You basically take the beans and get them hot in some way, shape, or form. And if you're using a can of beans, you don't even have to do that because, you know, they're already cooked. So, like, you can do everything in one pot. But ideally how you're supposed to do it is, you cook beans in some kind of vessel, pressure cooker, slow cooker, you know, stove. I don't care. Just get your beans cooked. Then in a separate pan, you can do this either at the last minute just before, serving, or, you can have the spices ready to go so that as soon as the beans are done cooking, you can stir the one into the other. It's again, personal preference. I'm not telling you how to live your life, just telling you how I do things. What I'll do, the way I do it anyway, is that I'll set either the pressure cooker or a pot or, you know, whatever on the stove to boil my beans. Then while that's going, I'll chop up vegetables and, you know, make whatever other side dishes I'm making and, you know, have the rice cooker going with rice. And it's a production. I'm not going to just make beans and rice for dinner. And because the beans take the longest time, I generally tend to put them on first, you know, put them on the stove, let them hang out, do their business. Masoor dal and, you know, the red lentils and, mung dal, you know, the split and hulled mung beans, those cook the fastest. They take about 15 minutes on the stove without soaking, without doing anything. You just throw them on the stove. They take about 15 minutes at high heat. And, you want about a 3-to-1 ratio of water to beans on this one for my way of how I like things. If you like things a little thicker, you can get away with like 2-to-1, give or take. You just need enough water so that the beans will cook without sticking to the bottom. I just like mine slightly more watery than most. And actually, if you asked an opinion of my mother or my sister-in-law, they'll tell you add even more water than that because they like their dal to be very liquidy. So like, this is personal opinion. I'm not telling you this is exactly how you do it. This is just how I like it. Tur dal, chana dal, those kinds of things, they look like split peas, basically. Anything that's kind of like split peas is going to take closer to 45 minutes to an hour to cook unsoaked. Then same thing with the lentils. Like, it'll take about 40, the regular brown lentils, that'll take about 45 minutes to an hour. And then whole beans like black beans or pinto beans, those will take, or black-eyed peas, those will take about an hour 15 to an hour 30 minutes, give or take, on the stove without soaking or doing much of anything else. And then any other bean, kidney beans, chickpeas, you know, those kinds of heartier beans that take a really, really long time to cook, I tend to soak them overnight just because they take such a long time to cook. It'll take about 3 hours if you don't soak them properly. If you do soak them, it takes about an hour. So, like, do what you feel. So I set the beans to boil on the stove while I'm chopping vegetables or, you know, making rice or doing whatever else that I'm doing. Then when the beans are pretty much done, to my liking, I'll take a little pan that I have. I actually have a specific tarka pan because I make this kind of thing so often that I need to have a special pan for it. If you go to the, like a discount store, like a Bed Bath & Beyond or Ross or, you know, Marshall's or something like that, they sell these pans that are meant to cook like one egg at a time or something like that. That's about the size of a tarka pan. That's about how small you want the thing to be. They sell cast iron skillets in that same size. I used to have access to a cast iron skillet that was like that tiny, tiny little size, and it was so perfect because I could, you know, get my oil in there and pretty much just turn off the heat because it kept the heat so long that I could pop all my spices in there, and it made it so that nothing burned. It was a glorious thing, but that wasn't mine to keep, so, you know, whoever it is has it now and they're enjoying it. But, you know, get whatever tiny pan you want, or use a regular pan. Just use the smallest pot you have access to, and this will get the job done. Per pound of beans, for a South Indian recipe, you want about 2 teaspoons to a tablespoon of oil, anywhere in between there. You want the smallest amount of oil humanly possible to pop your spices. So, you know, less is better. Again, South Indian style is very, very light, doesn't have a lot of fat. It's very watery. It's meant to be, eaten in very large quantities when it's hot outside. So, like, when it's hot outside, this is not the time for you to be chowing down on something heavy and that's gonna, you know, stick to your ribs or, you know, clump down to the bottom of your stomach like that. So stick with the least amount of fat that you can get away with. Don't go all the way down to non-fat, non-stick cooking spray because that's not enough to, you know, submerge your spices. And again, South Indian food is also tends to be lighter spiced than the North Indian food, so you don't tend to have as many spices, much less as much variety of spices as you would. So in that teaspoon or so of oil, you head it over, you hit it on high heat, until the oil is very, very hot. Then you add a couple of pinches of mustard seeds or cumin seeds or mustard seeds and cumin seeds or mustard seeds and cumin seeds and coriander seeds or whatever combination you like whatever whole spices you like to pop before you add it to a tarka. This is your time to shine. So you do whatever you want, but my favorite is mustard seed and cumin seed, and curry leaves and asafoetida. You may like things differently. You can do mustard seeds and turmeric and curry leaves and asafoetida and ginger and onion. That's a very valid combination. It's extremely delicious. I love it. You can do cumin seeds and coriander seeds that have been lightly crushed in the mortar and pestle, just fried lightly over oil with a little bit of turmeric. That's also very delicious. You can do mustard seeds and cumin seeds, fried with a little bit of asafoetida and throw that on top. That's perfectly valid. You know, you can skip the turmeric altogether if you feel like it. It's up to you. If you don't have access to curry leaves, I find that basil leaves work just fine. They taste really, really delicious when you fry them in the oil like that. Oregano leaves taste great. Thyme, you know, tastes really great in there fried with that oil. The idea is you want hot fat and one or two whole spices, maybe three, whatever, and either asafoetida or onion or garlic or ginger, not all of them, just one. And sometimes turmeric if you want it, leave it out if you don't. It's up to you. Some people prefer it with, some people prefer it without. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. And herbs, optionally herbs if you want. If you have curry leaves, throw them in. If you have basil, throw it in, whatever. But the basic version is heat up oil, add whole spice, add asafoetida, stir around until the damn thing is popping properly, and then just throw it into the dal and you're done. Like, that's how quick it is if you have pre-cooked beans. So now if you have canned beans, that's even quicker because all you have to do then is set a stove, you know, pot on the stove, about that's going to hold all your beans in, that is. And put in that couple of teaspoons of oil, and then pop your spices, and then just dump the can of beans with the liquid and everything right on top of the spices. Stir it to combine, and bing bang boom, you're done. You have dal in like minutes. You just need the time to bring it up to a boil. Now, the reason that you don't add the spices to the pot first is because you want, in a dal tarka, you want the spices to be crunchy. You want them to be crispy. You want them to have that texture that they have when they're first fried, which is why you don't make it in large quantities. You make dal tarka in very, very small quantities, eat it up at that meal, and finish it. It's not something that you want sitting. Because the joy of it, the reason why it works with such few spices and no aromatics and nothing fancy is because the crunch of the spices really makes up for the lack of anything else. So you kind of need to do it properly. I've seen people try to do the thing where they make dal tarka ahead of time, they keep it overnight, and then the next day it tastes really bland and boring because it doesn't really have much to hold on to. Now, if you want to make a quote-unquote proper dal, there's a couple of more steps. So, let's say you're going, you know, for an amalgam between North and South Indian. So you want something in between. You don't want it to be so light and fat-free that it's like South Indian and, you know, boring. But you don't want it to be so heavy like North Indian and have a ton of spices in. So, like, you want something, you know, let's say that would please most palates. That's not going to be sitting on either extreme of the fence. So what you want to do then is you cook your beans like you normally would. You can use canned, you can use fresh, you can use whatever you feel like. Cook your beans. Then before you start anything, because there's a quite a few ingredients that are going into the sucker that, you know, you want to give yourself time to do it. You want to chop up per pound of beans one large onion, couple of inches worth of ginger. You want to chop it up finely or grated or whatever. You want like 4 to 5 cloves of garlic that you mince up. You want a couple of stalks of curry leaves that you take off the stalks and tear in half, or basil or thyme or whatever, you know, herbs of your choice. And a couple of tomatoes. I use plum tomatoes. You can use whatever tomatoes you have in season. If you don't have tomatoes in season, whole tomatoes in juice are perfectly valid. You could well use canned tomatoes. It's perfectly fine. Just remove the stem end and, you know, just kind of mash it up with your hands. You don't want it to be you don't need to be precious about it and chop it into perfect pieces. You can just kind of mush it around and it'll be fine. If you do have regular tomatoes, though, go ahead and dice them up and take off the little stem end and you'll be fine. I tend to prefer them with fresh tomatoes, but if you can't find fresh tomatoes, the reason why I'm specifically telling you to use whole canned tomatoes is because most of the time diced tomatoes have calcium chloride put into them so that they keep their shape. With a dal, you don't want the tomatoes to keep their shape too much because it's going to mess up the texture. It's going to be unpleasant. You kind of want the tomatoes to break down into a gravy. Now, this is not a dish that you make with split beans. This is not a dal that you're going to be using mung dal or masoor dal or something like that for. This is a dish that you're going to be using for whole beans, like, you know, pinto beans or black-eyed peas or black beans or, you know, whatever you have on hand, or chana, you know, like if you have chickpeas on hand that you want to make dal out of, this is your chana dal that you're talking about. Your chana masala that you're talking about in all these recipe books. Anyway, so to run down, you want large onion, couple of tomatoes, some garlic, some ginger, some herbs of your choice, and then come the spices. And this is where the sky's the limit. You can pretty much do whatever you feel like, but my favorite combination, because I'm doing sort of like a north meets south, I like to do crushed coriander seeds, whole mustard seeds, whole cumin seeds, and whole sesame seeds. I like the flavor of those things together, along with some turmeric and whole dried red chilies. So what I do is that I get a large pot and I heat up oil in it. And I'm fairly generous with the oil. Let's say for 1 pound of beans, I'd use about 2.5 tablespoons, 3 tablespoons or so of oil, because there's a lot of stuff going on in there. I add my mustard seeds, let them pop. I add my cumin seeds and my crushed coriander seeds and let them, you know, saute and get fragrant. Then I add my sesame seeds and they will pop. They will pop all over the place because they're, you know, easy to pop. So anyway, I add my sesame seeds. Then I start with the garlic so that it gets really, really quickly fried in the oil. Then I add my curry leaves or basil or whatever else it is that I'm adding. And then I add my onion and my ginger and saute that all together until the onions are softened. I don't want them to get brown. I just want them softened and cooked all the way through. Reason being because it's a textural thing. If the onions cook down to like that jammy, you know, really sweet consistency, I find that it makes the dal too sweet for my liking. If you prefer a sweeter dal, go right ahead. Cook them down all the way. You know, no one's going to stop you. Your life, your rules. But I prefer the texture of the onions when they've been just cooked through. They're translucent. They're fragrant. They smell great. But there's still some texture left behind to it. So it's almost like you're chomping into vegetables while it's there. Then I add the tomatoes. Now, if I'm using the whole peeled tomatoes in the tomato juice, I will rip it up to shreds with my hands, or use a potato masher to rip it up, or, you know, something, or squish it between my fingers, whatever. If I'm using fresh tomatoes, I'll dice it up with, you know, with a knife and just have it ready. So I'll throw it in at the stage when the onions are cooked. Then I let the tomatoes cook down for a bit. If I'm using fresh tomatoes, I'll actually let it cook down until it becomes pretty much disintegrated. Now, I don't peel them or seed them if I'm using fresh tomato. If I'm using the pre-peeled canned tomato, they've already been peeled. So, like, again, your mileage may vary. If you really feel the need to sit there and peel tomatoes and take off the seeds and whatever else it is, I'm not here to stop you. But I find that it's really not necessary, especially since you're cooking the tomatoes so long that everything just kind of amalgamates and becomes like this really rich gravy. Then I'll add the beans of my choice. So, you know, but they have to be cooked. I don't want to cook them in acid and, you know, be sat there for hours and hours and hours trying to cook the beans and they never get cooked. This is a dish for cooked beans because those tomatoes are in there and there's a fair bit of acid in there. Then I add the beans to that and cook that down for a bit. Once everything's come together and I taste it for flavoring, you know, I add my salt, I add my pepper, whatever. And at this point, I will take the red chili, you know, just at the beginning of adding in the beans, and I'll add it into the pot along with the rest of it. The reason being, traditionally what you're supposed to do is take the red chili and fry it in the oil with the spices, but I find that it gets a little strong smelling, and, you know, if I don't have the windows open or something like that, I'm coughing because it's very, very easy to burn that chili. So I find that if I just leave it in there to boil with the rest of the beans and the juices, like, it'll give just a little bit of spiciness to the dish, but not take your face off. And if somebody really likes their food spicy, they can eat that, you know, dried red chili that's been cooked in the beans and it'll be fine. Again, personal preference. If you prefer the flavor of that chili to be pushed through the entire dish, go ahead and fry the broken up dried red chili along with your mustard seeds and cumin seeds and whatnot when you add them in there. But this is just the way I prefer it. So, you know, again, your mileage may vary. Once that's in there, then give it a quick stir, taste it for seasoning again. And now's when I add the fresh herbs. So this is when I would add, you know, chopped cilantro or chopped basil if I don't like cilantro, or, you know, whatever else I want. And, you know, just between you and me, this is not traditional, but, you know, this is just my thing that I do. I add lime juice at the absolute end. Once everything's done cooking and I'm ready to serve it, I add a few squeezes of lime juice because I find that because of the amount of heavy flavors going on in there, that just that bit of lime juice just wakes it up at the end. And people can't quite tell what it is about my beans that make them taste so good, but it's that. I feel like with so many times with beans, we get bogged down with these really heavy, creamy, you know, over-spiced situations where it's not very easy to eat. I find that this is a happy medium for me to just wake it up and perk up the flavors while still having something that's substantial and rich enough for me to, like, stay full for a few hours, because I find that the South Indian dal does not keep you full. You're going to be hungry very shortly afterwards, especially since we freaking eat it with white rice, of all things. Like, you know, at least in the north, when they're eating their dal, they eat it with roti or chapati or something like that, where it's whole wheat flatbread. In the south, we're eating it with white rice, for God's sake, and it's not going to keep you full for very long. So this is sort of my way of bulking out the meal without having to eat brown rice, because I don't care for brown rice. Anyway, that's you know, neither here nor there. Once it's done, you can serve it over whatever kind of rice you like, whether it's basmati or long grain or short grain rice, or, you know, whatever you have lying around. Depending on which side of the fence you want to sit, you can make it either slightly more well done, shall we say, or you can make it slightly more separate and fluffy. It's all up to you. You kind of customize these things the way you like it. And if you want to serve it with dal, what I would suggest is that you cook it down a little bit further until it's a lot thicker. If you want to serve it with rice, I would suggest that you add just a little bit more extra water so that the whole thing doesn't become a thick paste, you know, because if you have slightly mushy rice and you've got this really thick, stewy bean, once you mix it with the slightly mashed rice, it's going to become, you know, this clump. It's not going to be very pleasant. And again, this is why in the north they prefer the rice to be fluffy and separate and like perfect, because when you have a thick, stewy bean, you're not meant to stir it through. You're meant to sort of eat it served on top. You almost think of it sort of like mashed potatoes and gravy. I've rarely seen people take, you know, a bunch of gravy, throw it on top of the mashed potatoes, and then mix it all the way through. Most people, how I've seen it, is that they'll put the mashed potatoes in the bottom, they'll put the gravy on top of that, and then they'll eat the two of them together. This is very similar to how beans are eaten in the north. Dal is eaten in the north with, you know, the bland thing on the bottom, which is the rice. And you have fluffy separate rice so that you're not meant to mix it all the way through with the beans. Then you throw the beans on top and then you sort of eat it, you know, a little bit at a time. Like I said, much like you would eat mashed potatoes and gravy. So, like, it has to be thicker. It has to be richer because that's how you're eating it. Whereas in the South, since you're doing this mashing of the rice and you're doing the mixing of the beans through the rice and you're sort of making like a, you know, like a porridge almost in your bowl, you do need the beans to be a lot more watery than you would in the North. My apologies for that. That was my rice cooker telling me that the rice is ready. I need to eat too. So once you have your dal ready, you serve it with rice or bread or, you know, whatever you're going to serve it with. And you're good to go. Like, and this recipe pretty much works for your whole bean types of dal. The South Indian dal tarka works really well for the split and hulled dal. And if you want to make it more North Indian style, you do the same exact thing. So you do mustard seed and cumin seed and whole red chilies, dried red chilies, that is. And curry leaves, and you sort of fry that in really hot oil and dump that on top of the really thick, stewy, split lentils that you've cooked, and you serve it straight up. I mean, it's ready to roll in very little effort. The point is that the dal tarka is quick, the sort of hybrid dal that, you know, you generally think of when you eat it at a restaurant or something like that, is a little bit more long, a little bit more of a long process, but it's still perfectly valid. If you want to make that kind of dal where you have the tomatoes be a little bit more prominent, that's also perfectly valid. What you do is that you cook the beans, and then about when the beans are 3/4 of the way done, you add in your diced tomato or your, you know, whole tomato that you've smushed up or whatever it is, and you cook it that last the lentils, that is, not the beans, sorry. If you're trying to do that same recipe for lentils, like red lentils or mung dal or masoor dal or chana dal or whatever, you cook the lentils all the way through, almost until they're all the way done, and then add the tomatoes to that, because they're going to get cooked regardless of whether or not you have tomatoes in there. You just add the tomatoes towards the end, and then do your typical stuff like your onion and your garlic and everything else that I said. Just, you know, don't add the tomatoes to the onions and stuff. Add them to the beans. That way you can still have that same recipe that's got like all the flavor of the whole bean version, but without having the tomatoes completely disintegrate and turn the dal a funny color. Like, that weird orange color is not something that you expect from dal. You expect dal to be yellow. So, like, you know, do what you need to do. The North Indian dals do tend to be a lot more fatty, and they're extremely delicious. There are times when my mother has gone to the homes of our North Indian friends and eaten their dal and just been bowled over by how delicious it is, and, you know, would want the recipe to take home, and didn't realize that when they say, you know, put a few spoons of oil, they're not talking about teaspoons. They're talking about, like, serving spoons. So when they're making their dal, they put enormous quantities of oil in there. And it is so delicious, and it's so rich, and it's comforting, and it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that you want to eat on a winter's day. It's the sort of thing that you keep on hand in the fridge because it just gets better and better as it stays longer and longer. Like, it's one of those things that does improve with age. I guess you could say it's sort of like the Indian version of chili. There's 1,000 different recipes. There's, you know, a bunch of different ways of making it, but it's all meant to be very hearty and comforting. The most basic version, I'd say, is the green lentil dal. So, like, you get yourself some green lentils, and you wash them really well, you know, pick out the stones, whatever. And while you're doing the rest of this process, you just leave them in warm water. It doesn't need to be boiling, it just needs to be warm, and set them aside. And while that's going, in a deep pot, you add some cumin seeds, some coriander seed, a couple of pinches of fennel seed if you have it. If you don't, skip it. One stick of cinnamon and like a couple of pods of cardamom, and just kind of fry that in oil for a while. Then you add a boatload of onions. That's the thing. You need to take as many onions as you think you'll need, and then double it, and then you'll get close to about how many onions you need. So whereas for that hybrid dal and for the South Indian dals, you generally use like maybe one onion per pound or so of beans. On this one, you want to use 3 or 4. You need a lot of onions because they're meant to cook down. They're meant to cook all the way down and get, you know, medium to dark brown. So, like, you need a lot of onions here to really carry the flavor. So you add in your boatload of onions and you saute that down on high heat until they get some color on them, then drop down the heat to medium low and let them cook for a while so most of the water evaporates off and they get more and more concentrated as time goes on. Then while that's simmering away, you chop up some ginger, some garlic, and some, you know, green chilies or, you know, whatever kind of chilies you like. For this particular dish, I like green chilies because I feel like it's got this fresh brightness to it that the red chilies tend not to have. I find that the red chilies tend to be a little too pungent and too sharp. The green chilies are still sharp and spicy, but there's like a, let's be honest, there's a greenness to it. So it wakes it up. When the onions are cooked down to your liking, you add in the ginger and the garlic and the chilies and saute that with the whole thing. Then you add some turmeric to that whole mess and saute that all together for a while until the turmeric cooks out. Then you take the soaked lentils, drain off the water, add the soaked lentils to the onion and whatnot mix, and add just enough water to come up about a couple of inches above the level of the lentils. Let it come to a full rushing screaming boil, drop down the heat to as low as it goes, and let it simmer away. Now, while it's simmering, you can also throw in a couple of sprigs of thyme. You can throw in some bay leaves. You can throw in some rosemary, whatever you like. Some tomato, like, the sky's the limit. You can pretty much customize this to your liking, but the most basic one is just with the spices and the onions and the whatnot. And you just let that simmer for a really long time. It takes about an hour or so to get the lentils cooked all the way through. Once the lentils are cooked all the way through, you taste it for seasoning. You add your salt, your black pepper, your, you know, whatever else you want. And you're pretty much good to go. Like, you really do need to start with a large amount of oil because of the amount of onions that you're putting in there. So, like, let's say for a pound of beans, you want to go about a third of a cup of oil, and because you're sauteing like four onions in there, so you kind of need up to have enough fat so that the onions don't burn. You almost want to deep fry them, and once that's all come together, you know, it really tastes amazing. This works really great with kidney beans. It works great with black beans or pinto beans or, you know, any other kind of bean that you have your hands on. Again, there's a billion and a half recipes out there for dal of every kind. I'm just giving you some really simple, basic ones that I like to have on hand in my back pocket for when I don't have anything in the house and I'm too lazy to go shopping and I just want to eat something, you know, that I pull out of my pantry. I always have onions on hand. I always have spices on hand. I always have beans and rice on hand. So, like, if I need a quick meal and I don't have the time or the energy or the effort or the money to go to the grocery store, I can knock something out from what I've got lying around the house and I'll be fine. But again, there are many, 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 many variations. In the show notes, I'll put a link that I have to a couple of dal recipes that I wrote for my friends on the internet. And that way you'll have everything written down so you're not frantically writing everything down while I'm, you know, rambling at you. So, you know, feel free to try them out. Let me know if you have different opinions on dal. Please share them with me. Tell me what you think, how your family does it, how you do it even. And let me know, because I'm always interested in learning how different people do different things, especially when it comes to foods that are as ubiquitous as dal and rice. So as always, thank you so much for joining me. And if you want to email me, my email address is altveg, A-L-T, V as in vixen, E-G at me.com. So email me or don't, you know, but I would like to hear from you. I love hearing from you guys whenever you tell me your triumphs, your failures, your whatever else it is. From the last episode, I got a couple of emails talking about how they've tried the fat-free diet and didn't really last on it too terribly long because they were freaking miserable at the end of the first week and were just like, F it, we'll be fat and happy and who cares. And, you know, honestly, I'm not here to tell anybody that, you know, losing weight is healthy or unhealthy or whatever else it is. You do what you need to do to make yourself happy. The reason that I went on that, you know, fat-free diet to lose the weight was specifically because I just needed to fit into my pants. I could give two shits about the health or anything else like that. I'm not really fussed. It's mainly because I wanted to make sure that I can, you know, wear my pants again without having to go shopping again for it. It's the shallowest, most, you know, ridiculous reason. But when your money is really tight and you kind of have to watch your spending, there's the option of going and buying new clothes, you know, from the thrift store or whatever, sure, but like it's still more money than I have, or losing the freaking weight. If you feel like you want to lose weight, you know, disclaimer, talk to your doctor before you do anything crazy. Make sure that your body's ready for it, that it's whatever diet it is that you're trying to do is going to be healthy enough for you to be able to live on. Like, you know, don't take my advice on dieting, for God's sake. I'm not trying to tell anybody how to lose weight. I'm not trying to tell anyone that fat-free is better or whatever else. I'm just sharing my experiences and seeing how it works out for you. There were a couple of things that I wanted to update you on with regards to some of those preserved foods that I made. It's been about like a month and change since I made that chopped up salad with the mustard and the rice wine vinegar and all those little veggies in it. You know, the one with the kale stems and the zucchini and the daikon and the whatever else. That's still in my fridge and it's still good. It's really delicious. I just ate some today and it's perfectly fine. And the same with the pickled daikon, the julienne strips that I did with the salt and the pinch of sugar and the rice wine vinegar and the sesame seeds. That's still good. It's perfectly delicious. And I just ate it yesterday. That's why I love having it on hand, because it's like such a simple thing to make. It didn't cost very much. It's using up leftovers, which is great. And it's keeping for a good long time, so I can have snacks on it for ages and not have to worry about, you know, throwing it out or having it go bad on me. Now, mind you, I've been keeping it in my fridge. I haven't been keeping it on my countertop. But the point is that if it's been keeping for this month and a half that I've had it, you know, you might have good luck with it too. So, you know, here's hoping that it does work out for you. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me, and hope to see you again next time. Bye.